Welcome to the Levin Podcast in person, not for you listening, but for us here in the studio. Molly and I are back in the studio. Welcome back to the studio.
It's good to be with you live, face to face.
This is so weird, and I will tell it forever, that Molly and I were in the studio the day that we were kicked, you know, back home for the lockdown in 2020, and now we're back in the studio, and it feels very surreal, because it feels like it's been 3 weeks, but it has been a minute.
It's been 2 years.
Over two years.
Yeah. Which is really, really crazy.
Yeah.
So today, though, there's a bunch of new things happening. Besides us being in the studio, we're also joined by someone new. So first, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Kristen Blazek, and I am Coordinator of Student Recruitment for the College of Urban Affairs, and I'm one of the hosts of the podcast, the Levin Podcast. Molly?
Molly Schnoke. I'm with the Center for Community Planning and Development at the Levin College.
And my partner in crime in these.
Partner in crime.
And today we are here with someone new from a new college that we normally talk about, the Urban College, but today we're going to talk about the College of Education. So do you want to introduce yourself? Because I'm so excited you're here.
Sure. Yeah. I'm Amanda Urich. I'm a faculty member in the College of Education and Human Services, soon to be merged with Urban, coming up very soon in July. I've been faculty. I'm completing my 15th year on faculty. And so I teach courses in special education and applied behavior analysis, and I'm also the director of our Community Learning Center for Children and Youth, which is what we're talking about today.
I'm really excited to talk about that today. Mm-hmm. And you touched on it where I was going to start. We're going to start with the reason why I'm really excited that not only we're in this space, but we're talking with you is because the College of Urban Affairs and the College of Education, along with the School of Communication, mm-hmm. we're all going to get together and be buddy-buddy. And the importance of urban and education, because for me, I feel like, you know, why hasn't this been done sooner? Because, you know, everything that we teach up in urban, mm-hmm. it all does correspond with education. Everything you teach down in education corresponds with urban.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, education being an infrastructure of urban environments and certainly central to what we do at Cleveland State. Cleveland State, you know, has a focus on urban education, urban development, and so forth. And so I'm excited about the merger. You know, as things change, it can be bumpy at times, and there's always, you know, shifts and things that you have to adjust to. But I'm excited because I do think it's a very likely marriage. You know, I think it makes sense.
I think so too. And in the time that I've spent down in the College of Education and everything like that, you know, we talk about redlining a lot up in the College of Urban Affairs and how that, and then I went down to education and they're teaching the same thing and mm-hmm. how they had to do with education. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, this goes together completely. So right. I am excited for that. And so speaking of that, we're going to be talking about some infrastructure and some things going on with K through 12 today, mm-hmm. which I talk a lot about higher education. So we're going to talk about K through 12 today. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I really want to talk about is what was the status? What was going on before the pandemic in K through 12?
Oh, something is always going on, but I mean,
everything's going on.
Yeah, I mean, our focus in education has always been to see, you know, to optimize student success. So really, as we, you know, I mean, I could go back many decades historically, but we've moved into an era of really facilitating optimal outcomes for students now. What goes hand in hand with that to some degree is always assessment. And so you always hear about we're actually in what we call testing season right now in mm-hmm. terms of K-12 education. At this time in the year is when kids are evaluated and districts then are evaluated and states are evaluated and on and on and on. So as with any discipline, we sort of go through our cycle of development. And so in education, prior to the pandemic, at this time of the year, they were getting ready for testing season as typical, which drives a lot of how schools are funded, how they receive funding, what they draw funds down from. And it was right at this point in time that everything went, right? It stopped immediately right there. And I remember, I mean, I'm a parent, so I have school-age children, and I remember them coming home, and at first it was, we're going to have an extra week of spring break, which sounded great, right?
Yeah.
And I remember, I mean, a cute story is during that winter prior, my son, you know, like all kids, they want snow days, right? So he had been praying for snow days, mm-hmm. snow days. But they weren't coming because climate change. But, you know, whatever.
That's a subject for a different,
different time. But we weren't getting these snow days. And then all of a sudden, the school said, you know, the district said, okay, we're getting an extra week of spring break. And then as we went through that, it turned into two more weeks of spring break. And then they said, okay, we're going remote. And my son, Trey, he goes, well, I just wanted a snow day. I didn't know they were going to send us home forever, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
So everything just sort of abruptly shifted. And in that shift, you know, teachers who were charged with their typical day-to-day, you know, work of, at this particular point in time, testing, had to move remote. How do we do that? Right? So how do we evaluate kids for all these, you know, state and federally mandated reasons? And then how do we just teach kids, mm-hmm. you know, in this format of, you know, now where I used to have you right in front of me and was ready to do this, now I have to find ways to do this from a distance and with like multiple kids, mm-hmm. you know,
right?
Not to mention family involvement and everything. I mean, there's so many levels to it.
I think that's what I was going to ask next is, so when schools went, you know, for, you know, on lockdown,
mm-hmm.
which the day CMSD went on lockdown, I thought was never going to happen. I thought for sure they're never going to go. There's no way mm-hmm. they can go on lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
What did it look like for the different school districts, the different schools to go down for lockdown? Like, who had it harder and who had it a little bit easier to go down for lockdown?
You know, I think if you asked anybody, nobody would say that they had it easy. I would probably be the one to report, you know, I particularly in my own home had the easiest transition because my kids are well situated in terms of having technology, access to internet, not to mention me there with them at home because CSU also was going remote. Mm-hmm. So now I'm teaching from home, not to mention I'm a faculty member in education. So theoretically, I know something about teaching, right?
Right.
So, I mean, some people were better positioned. Now others, I mean, it really is the perfect storm of absolute, you know, chaos mm-hmm. for families because you have kids who, you know, the routine of going to school affords them not just an education, but a lot of other things that are necessary. Access to peers, socialization, access to wellness programs, food, nutrition, and the list goes on. And so we rely on our schools in such a fundamental social capacity that I don't think schools really all the time get credit for. You know what I mean? We get thought of as, oh, you just go there and you learn to read, you learn to write, but you learn so much more and you rely so much on those structures in your community to support families. So you have families who the parents, if they are, you know, working wage positions, are still going out in a very dangerous environment, don't have childcare,
mm-hmm.
can't afford childcare, have kids who are home, tasked with essentially, if they have technology, logging on, like, hey, I mean, right. I have great kids. I love my kids. If I leave for the day, you go, hey, just log on and do your work. You know what I mean?
It's yeah.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
That? No.
Right?
That's not gonna
I
happen.
Mean, there's, we, you know, everybody
well,
is.
Well, and there were problems you know. With it at the beginning, too. Right?
Oh, my
getting,
goodness.
Getting on Zoom and the overcoming the hurdles of daily use of the technology and stuff
right.
going down that school districts had to deal with.
Right.
And kids, my kids included, I can't get on. Right? And
right.
then at some point they give up because, as any 10-year-old,
mm-hmm.
you know, or younger child would, you're
right.
not persistent, you know, you're
yeah.
not persistent in
right.
that. I mean, you talk about testing, at that point, that all that goes out the window.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just,
can I get on?
Can I get on?
right.
And did the kids show up?
Right.
And you had the whole problem of, in a lot of school districts, the reports coming out in the media were, they were losing kids. They just weren't even there. They weren't showing up.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't logging on.
That's right.
And the worry then of also what's happening to
mm-hmm.
them.
That's
you
right.
You were talking about the social sort of infrastructure
mm-hmm.
that schools provide too. So what is happening to these children in the interim when
right.
they're not in school, they're not online, there is no way of reaching them.
Right. Right. No, we had a tremendous influx of just things that we always knew were simmering under the surface of, you know, there's certain things that we do well in education, there's certain things that we don't. Everybody has the, you know, things, skeletons in the closet behind them. And there were certain realities that we were just smacked with
right
in the face of, like, wow, we're not doing a good job at X, Y, and Z, and scrambling in a time where we're all truly stressed and concerned about the safety and welfare of our own selves, our immediate family, our, you know, extended family, in a time where we didn't know what this pandemic, what this virus would really facilitate, it would manifest to look like. And so we do have kids then who are not showing up. And a lot of this, you know, it's like we say this stuff and it's not like families are, and we get this feeling sometimes of like, well, if mom would just, or if that kid would just, and I really want to underscore the fact that everybody did the very best they could.
Yeah.
I promise you, everybody's doing the very best that they could. And the reality is that there are times where the internet is out, the computer's not charged, the platform is locking them out,
right?
And the teacher then is tasked with trying to navigate this times 25 different kids in her class or his class. It was just a really Herculean task. And, you know, now that we're 2 years out, I think, I'm really happy to say that I think that we learned some really valuable things from it. We really learned how to do some things well. So to put the positive on it, you know, while there were these times of like real touch and go times that you're like, oh, this is not going so well, we really did. Education, I've been very proud to say, has been very responsive and reflexive and been able to adapt and keep what worked, refine what worked. And even then in that subsequent fall, so, you know, in spring 2020,
it was a free-for-all.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I remember my kids' classrooms. Like, some people are using this platform. If you log into some, I don't know how old your kids are, if you log into something called Clever, there's, like, 25 platforms.
Clever's familiar to me,
you know,
yes.
You can choose from that. You're like, it's like choose your own adventure. Right. Like, Schoology, you know, like, it's so many things. And it was just not organized. By fall, we kind of got ourselves, you know what I mean? It got under us. Okay, we're going to use Google Classroom, and this is the platform we're going to use. And it was a little bit more well-rounded. But we were still experiencing things like, is it really now reaching kids, or are we just doing busy work, right? Mm-hmm. So we're on a platform. So what are we calling? Like, what's the line here? What does it mean, teaching and learning?
Right.
Does it have to be in person? Does it have to be synchronous? Can we do it well asynchronous? I mean, just a myriad of questions kind of blossomed from this. And, you know, I mean, in terms of, like, the work that we do in the center, my position becoming director was not foreseen or planned and was one of these pieces that kind of emerged from the soil of the pandemic and a lot of different things. And we were able to respond to some of these things and change the way we did things to try to meet families in ways that made more sense, that could engage their children in more meaningful ways. That a teacher, given, you know, one teacher and 25 kids on a screen, just can't. So there's been a lot of changes, you know, and I do think that some of them have been wonderful. Wonderful additions to the field that we may not have done had we not had to.
But are urban schools still so under-resourced that a lot of what has been learned and integrated into better practice in schools still is out of reach for a lot of school districts? Or they're still behind, it's still very difficult for them to do, or some of those things are even difficult because of the populations they serve?
So I would say maybe yes to the latter point that you made. Difficult because of the populations that they serve. There can certainly be more difficulties. But what I will say, you know, to the good, is the way we responded in actually meaningfully delivering funding and support to needed infrastructure, schools included, was enormously beneficial. Has been beneficial, where we don't, you know, I'm not going to say never, we do see gaps still sometimes in technology availability or, you know, internet access and those sorts of things. Those things still exist. But having been in this field for many, many years, decades now, I've seen times where it's like the wheels just turn too slowly to make any difference. And the pandemic made those wheels turn a lot faster.
You needed rapid response.
Yeah, that they just never had before. So I was really pleased with that. So in terms of ensuring access to devices and internet and different policies related to attendance and retention and credit recovery and these sorts of things, our urban districts, particularly ours in Cleveland, I think has been really encouraging. I mean, I'm very encouraged by that response that I saw. The difficulty is that we still lack this fundamental connection with families. We still lack, so school still operates as like school, mm-hmm. and home still operates as home, and the webs of communication between and among still need that support, still need that boost, someone to be, you know, and schools have done a terrific job, but the reality is when we have families who are, like I mentioned before, you know, frontline workers. So these are people that, you know, continued to work full time in person during all stages of the pandemic. When we have families that, you know, mom and dad are gone by 5:30 in the morning or not returning until 9:30 at night or on different shifts and so forth, it just doesn't align with our typical, well, school happens from 8 to 3.
Right.
You know what I mean? And this is how we work, but that's not how families' worlds work.
The entirety of society is built around sort of that 9 to 5 clock.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. For childcare, even before that.
Right.
And the pressures of, you know, I can't have late meetings or early meetings or my kids come home at this time, and different school districts, you know, one might be out at 2, one might be out at 4, and
right. Yeah. And one goes in at 7 and the other one goes in at 8:30
right.
And you know, it's even the school time right now with working, how do you work 8 to 5 but your child goes to school from 7:30 to 2?
Right. There's a lot of juggling that takes place for everyone in some ways, regardless of what job you have in those kind of 8 to 5 hours
absolutely
of the day. That has to have been even just more exhausting to figure out and navigate when you're talking about these dynamics now of I have to go, right? Mm-hmm. I was in a position where I got to be home too.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know what I would have done and what things would have looked like had I not had that. And you hear from other people what that mm-hmm. was like, and you're dealing with some of these school districts where it's a lot of these people are frontline workers. A lot of the parents
mm-hmm.
have to go to work.
Right.
Where are the resources? Where is the community that comes together to ensure that there is someone for children to turn to?
Right.
When parents aren't home,
right.
When home is a question mark.
That's right. That is right. And the thing is, especially when we have, you know, parents are tasked with, okay, my kid has to get on. They're, you know, parents are in their day. You just saw me before we got on here. My daughter's school is calling and I'm responding to an issue at my daughter's. It's an all the time thing, right? Mm-hmm. But parents still have to go do their work, do their job. And they're trying to be all things to all people all the time. And I think we just don't recognize how tough and taxing that is, and that people will not be perfect all the time. So when we have kids who are not logging on time, right, mm-hmm. and the school's over there wagging their finger, and, oh my goodness, we just got to get the parents to do this. And the parents are over here like, what am I supposed to do? Be a full-time worker mm-hmm. and be a teacher too?
Right.
And now I have multiple jobs and I can't, you know what I mean? It's just asking the impossible. So looking for these niches, you know, where can I come in and help? How can we come in and help? And one of the things during that time, that chaotic March 2020 time, the CLC, you know, where, so
I was going to ask you, can we talk a little bit about the CLC? Because you've said it a couple times, and I'm like,
yeah,
just so that everyone knows the great work that you guys are doing over in the College of Education and CLC, soon to be merged with us. What is the CLC?
What is the CLC? It's the Community Learning Center for Children and Youth. It's a center in Julka Hall on campus here, a physical space in Julka Hall, which has coordinated experiences between College of Education teacher preparation courses. So people who want to become teachers, and they're in the classroom, and their professors are professing to them, as we do, and they get to come into the center to be partnered with small group with K-12 learners from around Cleveland, whose families sign them up to come in and get extra support, right? So they can come in, and it's like the pre-service teachers get to practice what they're learning about in the classroom, and the families get some additional, you know, one-on-one attention for their children for whatever needs they might have. And it's a cooperative effort that's always been offered completely free of charge to families, and really allows some more engaged experiences for our pre-service teachers who are just getting their footing underneath mm-hmm. them. This is before student teaching or anything like that. So it's like, yeah, I think I like teaching. I'm learning about it. But what's it really like? And it kind of puts them in a low-stakes environment, right? Like just one kid, two kids in front of them. No, you know, well, if it's my class, I'm hovering over them, making them nervous. No, but no big, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is my student teaching. I have to do X, Y, and Z. It's more about providing that sort of informal mm-hmm. environment for them to work. So that's always been in existence in person, right? So that, and this is how I came to use the center. I always use the center as faculty. So for my courses, we would come in and we would do, you know, individualized differentiated instruction for kids with learning disabilities or without disabilities who just, you know, at risk needed some help in literacy, math, and different content areas. I always used it in person. And like I mentioned before, the confluence of events and the changing structures of the university and so forth left the CLC in kind of a gray area. Mm-hmm. Like, will we continue to support it? Because it doesn't have its own, you know, support line or anything like that. So will we continue to have a center? And I'm a person who's used it for my classes and loved it. And I'm over here like, oh, I don't want to see the center go by the wayside. But you kind of play chicken with it. You kind of wait.
I always saw it when I would go in for classes. I always saw the students like lining up to leave. Mm-hmm. And like I'm walking in for class and watching these kids being picked up and taken, you know, and it's, and so I always see the room for the CLC and when you just walk in Joka.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space, and I didn't want to see it, you know, not be used, but in conjunction then with the pandemic is happening, there was kind of like, okay, well, we'll just put it on pause because mm-hmm. nobody's going in person. We can't do this right now. And in my mind, I was like, I don't think that's good. I'm going to go ahead and try this. So I said, I'll try this with my classes. I'll do remote experiences. Mm. And I met with the, you know, department chair and dean and everything. And I said, yeah, just I'll try it out. let me have at it.
It's a time for experimentation. Everybody's trying
everything
to
was
things,
off the
right?
rails. So I'm just like, you know, let's
we experimented
let's go.
At the podcast on Zoom,
right?
Yeah, right. You're just trying stuff, and I've always been a big proponent of this. I tell my kids all the time, I just keep trying stuff and see what works out. That's kind of been my go-to method of, you know, doing life. So I'm like, okay, I'll just try this out. And I sort of redesigned my course, made some shifts in it, and I moved to Zoom because one thing I found out very quickly was accessing platforms that are internal to structures, so either like CMSD's internal mm-hmm. platform or mm-hmm. CSU's internal platform, caused me all types of problems.
Right.
So that's out the window off the road. And since nobody's really guiding this, I was sort of free to just develop how I wanted to develop it. And I said, okay, we're going to use an equally accessible platform, Zoom, that parents can get on, kids can get on. I developed these consents. And then I came into the directorship on the CLC, so I shifted everything into the website. So things that would have been done on paper mm-hmm. in the center, everything goes over to the website, a registration system, all of those sorts of things, so that we effectively moved everything that was done in person online. And I did this in the course of a summer so that when we, you know, came back, I said, okay, we're going to run programming with the College of Ed classes that doesn't just meet after school but meets during the day. And what this allowed was to work with kids. So we were just talking about kids aren't logging on, they're mm-hmm. not engaged. Now we have a whole cohort of additional, you know, hands on deck, virtual hands on deck for students who will work with individually the kids who are now, you know, they're supposed to be on their Google Classroom, but the teacher's like, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. And in real time, I'm not kidding you, if you could see my cell phone during this time, thousands of text messages, because we're really mediating it right now. So teachers are saying, you know, where's Jonathan? He hasn't showed up. And I'm texting I created a position, the faculty family liaison. This woman is tremendous. Shout out to Casey. She
snaps to Casey
in real time, is texting kids, texting their parents, calling them, hey, having trouble logging on? Let me help you out. You know what I mean? Right. Like someone who actually is reaching out in this moment. It's not waiting for an attendance sheet, you know, at the end of the day. Oh, they didn't show up, so we'll send out an email 2 days later. It's right now.
It's a real-time intervention.
It's real-time intervention.
How does that translate to back to school now?
So in terms of back to school, I mean, it's like in the classroom, who, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like
how do you do that?
How do you do that in the physical, you know, kind of space? But I think that, you know, kids, because the other pieces I forgot to mention. Now, so we mentioned like what we learned from the pandemic and what's changed. Now kids have come back to school, but you know there's a whole bunch of kids that still are online.
Yeah.
So the amount of online education that we used to have it as an option, but it was always kind of like that hazy, dark corner.
Yeah.
You go to school online.
Yeah, like the online homeschool. Yeah.
Right. Like it's something else. It's something different. But now it's an integral, equal part of the schooling platform. So we have kids who are in person, right? They're your regular kids. We're showing up. We're getting on the bus at 8 a.m. and we're staying here till 3 and we're going home. Then you have kids who are either synchronously online or asynchronously online. Most districts now offer a virtual platform. So it used to be like this one company, you know what I'm saying? Like Ohio Online or something like that. But now all districts have that option for their students. And so districts are now kind of navigating all these different platforms. It's very complex, you know, in the type of of education kids are getting. But what we do know, and this is a downside, unfortunately, I mean, I'm not a big proponent of, but I'm very open-minded to different ways of schooling.
Yeah.
Right? So I think this is something different from people think you must do it in person. I don't go as far as saying you must do it in person, but I do go as far as to say if you're going to do it virtually, remotely, that there has to be certain things attended to. Certain aspects of quality instruction that we know that we get in the in-person has to have an analog accounted for in the remote. You can't just be like, just
forget about that. It's not.
Right. Just go do your stuff. You know what I mean? You might have one kid in 100 that's going to be that real gung-ho kid that's going to be like, okay, I just learn on my own. But
right.
For real,
very few people
right, that's handle not that. Happening.
And adults, the same
way.
Of course.
Right? Of course. Yeah.
Well, I know before the pandemic, which I thought was crazy, before the pandemic, there was a school district in Colorado because I was watching like the YouTube family, right? And they were documenting their life. And their daughters were in high school. And their high school had the option that you could take a week and it was like a mental health week. Mm. And you could do a mental health week and not come into school.
Mm-hmm.
And you would do all the work from home.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be online modules. Mm-hmm. And as long as you completed those modules, you could do it. They weren't counted as absences or tardies.
Mm-hmm.
And you got so many weeks a year that you could just say, I can't handle high school.
Yeah.
Right? I can't handle everything that's going on and I want to stay home. And I think we as adults kind of have that.
Absolutely.
Where we have sick days and vacation days where we can say, I can't handle work right now. I have to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And to expect kids for 9 months out of the year to not have a break or anything like that. I like the idea of going forward with having like that kind of mental health option.
I cannot endorse that enough. And just as a personal aside, in raising my own children, one of my real crucial considerations is teaching them how to manage their own stress load, their own stress level. And so something like that, which is important not just to afford, you know, younger people the same things we afford ourselves that we know we need.
Right.
Not just to afford that to them, but to really begin to teach and turn over ownership of, you should recognize when your plate is too full.
Mm-hmm.
Start to analyze your own internal cues. Like I think about my son, and he's a kid who is, he's so diligent. He's so overly diligent. I mean, he's a fantastic kid. The thing that a lot of parents are like worried about their kids failing. I'm worried about him over excelling sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to look at what is your plate, what's manageable for you, and when do you see those cues of like, I just can't handle this anymore, and do you have the tools to address that proactively for yourself before you become, you know, enthralled in these really stressful, challenging, and detrimental situations for yourself. I think that is something that must be explicitly taught in a curriculum, has to be explicitly afforded to kids. Because what we've learned is, like, we can all handle only so much. And we need to take responsibility for what we can handle and what we can't handle. One of the things I tell my students all the time, when I have students who come to me who say proactively, like, hey, I think I'm going to drop your class this semester, X, Y, and Z, but they have a real good rationale for this is what's coming up, this is what I can do and what I can't do, I think that's an exceptional student. I think that's somebody who can really sort of have a real good trajectory for their progression. You don't have to do all things all the time, all perfectly. You just have to look at, like, what's manageable for you. And I think something like that very much should be incorporated in school districts. And I don't know that I've seen anything quite like that, but I have seen school districts be more amenable to different reasons for absence, mm-hmm. right, than they used to be. So I haven't seen anybody actually afford, like, a policy, at least in my immediate, right. you know, district. But I'd be a huge proponent of it.
So for especially urban school districts and increasingly suburban school mm-hmm. districts, as they are faced with similar pressures in their community mm-hmm. and with their populations, a lot of these students are coming into classrooms or coming into schools with a whole host of other burdens that they're bringing in right. with them. Mm-hmm. And so I can see a mental health week as being, you know, a really good thing if you have all the resources at home, too. But you have kids who go to school because that's where they eat. That's right. yeah. have the, where they have access to right. the most food, right?
Right.
School can be a break. Mm-hmm. from all those other pressures, right? Mm-hmm. So they're seeking out mm-hmm. actually a break from maybe worse things at home. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks in the city of Cleveland receive things like utility assistance. So you're talking about, you know, homes that may not be adequately heated or,
mm-hmm. right?
And, you know, where are we affording those students, maybe not the mental health week, but the come into school and get other resources week, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where it's not in the necessarily in the classroom, mm-hmm. but a whole host of other wraparound services mm-hmm. that you may need. Mm-hmm. So come to the school, but you may not have to go to class, or it's talk to this person, mm-hmm. or we'll help you sign up for this, mm-hmm. or sit and talk to somebody, or just sit and read in a quiet space, whatever those additional yeah. needs are also.
Right. I've seen tremendous strides, particularly in Cleveland District with, I don't know if you're familiar with the Say Yes initiative in mm-hmm. Cleveland, and those Say Yes coordinators in schools are filling exactly the types of needs you're talking about. And I've been very fortunate to be, I've been in a number of CMSD schools over the years through our programs and whatnot, and I have met some absolutely fantastic individuals who do that sort of thing. And now Cleveland finally has, I want to say, like, all their schools are Say Yes schools now, or will be in the coming year, will have that available. But that's Cleveland, and I don't even know, when we talk about our first ring suburbs, it's like they're not hugely qualitatively different than mm-hmm. Cleveland proper. Not you. Some of them are. Some of them are not, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know that, you know, it's like, this is the interesting thing about education is, like, it's such a fundamental, you know, structure of our society. I mean, it just generally is a pillar of our society that operates on a very piecemeal basis, right? That we go down all the way to the local level of, you know,
right.
different districts. And so, gosh, we're going to get into how we fund mm-hmm. education, yeah. the inequity in that by itself. And it's like this type of problem at this point, we still haven't right. resolved this. Like, right. we still haven't really gotten this right. I don't know. I mean, it's at this point, it's sort of becoming almost, you know, it's like, what do we value this or don't we value yeah. it?
Yeah. Everyone has one. Every place has a school district.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet they are so disconnected from each other.
Yeah. So unequally funded, addressed, access to different resources, the way they operate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just...
The times they start.
The times
they... You're talking about the platforms they
it's
use.
Also, it's the curriculum and mm-hmm. how the curriculum is taught. For, you know, for the years and years and years, you talk mm-hmm. about the different ways that history is taught depending on where you are in the United States.
Right.
You
right.
know? And,
right.
Or science and now math and...
Right. And these things are driven, I mean, not to veer too politically, but these things are driven by the constituency mm-hmm. and not necessarily by folks in the profession, right?
Right?
And that's becoming a real, I mean, that's becoming a real hot topic.
Which
right
I think
now,
it, this is why I like the, to go completely full circle, why I like the merger of education and urban studies mm-hmm. because it's our students going out there working to fund education. It's our students mm-hmm. that will understand mm-hmm. what, you know, schools need. And
right.
then vice versa, teachers understanding how is it that policy is running their lives,
right.
how they can have the voice in policy, how they can act on their behalf. And it's just that merger together that I think
is
hopefully going to help out education in the future.
It makes a lot of sense. And we need to be more than just neighbors. You know, we need mm-hmm. to really intimately know how one affects the other and the impacts of how we commingle. And I do think, you know, the merger just, you know, being having the opportunity to interact more with the faculty and more with the student population. And I'd love opportunities to talk with urban faculty about how might we use the center in your courses. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That we could give students a real opportunity, even if just to shadow students in education, see what they're doing, see what they're, you know, what that field is about, just to have that sort of background knowledge when they go into their own, you know, mm-hmm. interest areas in urban development planning, whatever it might be.
I feel like it's the students are the same thing. They have the same mission, you know. They don't want to be teachers, but they still want all of our students at Urban. They want to help.
Right.
They're just... They don't know how to help out, and
right.
They know they don't want to be an educator, but that doesn't mean that education isn't first on their mind.
Absolutely,
and it's a way to go into education. So this is where I am excited for this, and I love the idea of your center. I love what you're doing down there, and all the snaps for you for getting, you know, and you know, I think about getting us in place to do virtual because I mean as Dr. Fauci has said, as the CDC has said, this has become an endemic.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to see rises and falls,
mm-hmm.
and who knows what's coming down the line.
Right.
And now we are more prepared to take, say, you know, like, even if the flu is ravaging the school, say, we'll take a month
mm-hmm.
of virtual learning.
Mm-hmm. And, in real time, one of the things that we developed policy-wise in the center was that even as we move back to in-person, we retain the remote to the degree that, so let's say I have a tutor and a tutee, and for whatever reason, and it doesn't have to be sickness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Family's car broke down.
Yeah, we can't make it.
Mm-hmm. We're like, cool, okay, log on to the Zoom room. We have an ongoing open Zoom room. Log on there, and then my tutor in the center who is in person, I'm like, hey, your kid's not coming. Go to this computer, log on, and there's the kid, and we just, in the moment, make that connection again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's flexible in the sense that, like, we don't need these elaborate call-off procedures or whatnot. We just need these really dynamic and real-time pieces to respond to what's happening in front of us. So I have a tutor in the center. Kid's not there yet. Casey or Sydney, the program, the office manager there, makes a call. Hey, where you at? Oh, my gosh, stuck in traffic. Okay, well, log on. And I've had kids log on and their phone in the back seat. They're on the phone in the back seat in a Zoom room, and my tutor's over here in the Zoom room, you know, like, okay, and they're talking to the kid, and at the very least, they're making a connection, right?
Yeah.
So maybe we're not doing the most work that day, like you don't have pen and paper in front of you or whatever, but our students have been fantastic in finding ways to make that connection in the moment, you know what I mean, with little you know, lead time to say, this is what's happening right now. And in the center, we just had the opportunity, thank you, Dr. Jackson, to purchase a number of additional Chromebooks. And these Chromebooks are for the purpose of loaning to families. We have mm-hmm. a student, he's a great kid, always attends or calls, but the issue is his computer at home doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, the internet, it just doesn't work. Mom is really, like, on it. She, you know, these are parents who, and I always say this, I always say, even if kids are not attending perfectly, I want you to keep in mind, these are families who care enough that at the end of the day, they're picking up their kid to say, hey, we're going to go do more, you know, we're going to go do tutoring.
We're
going to
do more school for
right.
you.
Right. So this is a family that really values education, you know, just want to put that on the table. But this student, and we'll see him, he'll be late. Then he logs on 15 minutes later and he's in the library. So he's going to another space to try to connect. And it's like, when you see people going to these lengths, it's like, we have to find ways to meet those needs. And it really just has to be a way that we can do in real time, in the moment. So we have these Chromebooks, you know, to be able to go out, lend out to families, you know, for this period of time and whatnot to make that connection, especially when we see kids who want to be there, try to be there, do well when they're there. I don't want these, you know, sort of obstacles to be the reason they're not engaged. So these are all pieces that we've kind of built into how we respond now to our enrollments, you know. So when families enroll, they know that, you know, there's like we'll have like a lending agreement to, you know, for these Chromebooks to go out and that sort of thing. And it's all part of the registration system that we developed for the website. So it's trying to make these pieces fill these holes, you know, where we can.
Yeah. I'm excited to say that, you know, maybe end of next academic year, right, we can come back and talk and say, you know, what has changed and what have schools really more successfully implemented and what has stuck.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that we're getting back to this pattern of, you know, normal face-to-face regularity.
Right.
You know, what have school districts really adopted and what have they really learned?
Yeah. And I think it's wide open. There's a lot on the table. I know that I personally am part of some planning groups. Eric Gordon, the CEO in CMSD, is very forward thinking. I'm excited about the ways in which many people have risen to the opportunity and see it as an opportunity. You know, we definitely know it's a challenge.
Yeah.
We know that.
Right.
But also, like, really risen to the opportunity. And I think our teachers are some of the most dynamic bunch of people and professionals that want to really make sure that we're helping kids. So I always say this to my students, everyone's a good actor here. Everyone's a good actor for their strengths and their weaknesses and what have you. Parents, kids, teachers, administrators, faculty, we're all good actors.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just finding, well, what do you do and what can't you do?
Right.
And being
right.
okay with saying, like, I can't really do that.
Right.
I'm not good at that.
We're all there for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. How do we make it work?
Mm-hmm.
It's a community effort.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. And I am looking forward to that. We'll have to come back next year.
And what really has...
Yeah.
Check in and be like,
what's happening now?
And we have some, you know, at the center, we have some grant application, like I mentioned before, that funding came in real time. And what we're seeing now is some of that funding really filtering down to the schools. So we have some grant applications out there to scale up our programming, to do more with even more kids and more districts. So fingers crossed. I mean, I'm hoping that comes through and that we can continue to do the work we do. Because I know my staff, Casey and Sydney, we're small but mighty.
Mm-hmm.
They do such good work. And we have, you know, we have such good plans and efforts. So I just want to see it all blossom to fruition. So just like now, we're in the springtime of our development. You know, there's buds there. There's things we can do, and they'll grow. Hopefully, we're not covered in snow.
Yeah,
I don't know what analogy that is, but
it eventually thaws.
It always thaws.
Fingers crossed. Well, I'm so glad that we had this conversation about coming back into real, you know, in person. As our first podcast is back in person. So I want to thank you so much for coming in to have this conversation. Molly, thank you as always for coming and talking with us today and being
part of
this. It's
always nice that you let me come with you.
I know, right? Come, beg, whatever.
You let me tag along.
I really appreciate it. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe and like so we know this is what's going on. And check out more podcasts in the future and check out new ones that are coming that, you know, we have in the past. And one day, Molly, we'll retape our podcast. I will talk forever about our lost podcast.
The lost podcast.
The lost podcast.
Pandemic podcast.
That's right. It's what's lost in the pandemic, that one. All right. Well, thank you so much. And everyone have a fantastic day.
Thank you.